This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook of your choice. Go to audiblepodcast.com/majority report. That's audiblepodcast.com/majority report for a free audiobook.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, September 7th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday. Today on the program, I think actually from the airport in Charlotte, leaving the Democratic National Convention, Cliff Schechter. Also on the program today, we will get an analysis of President Obama's speech from last night from Andy Kindler, Obamabot. And also on the program, Abi Hassan, the Mass Defense Coordinator from the National Lawyers Guild, will give us a wrap-up of the protests that took place outside of the Democratic National Convention this week. And also on the program, Nutso Judge blames essentially a sexual harassment victim for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. The CIA, which was held completely unaccountable by the Department of Justice last week for torture that led to the death of prisoners. Now a new scandal, human rights organization says they sort of fibbed about how many of those people they tortured. I know that comes as a surprise. And yes, of course, student loans, just the first step on a slippery slope to a Holocaust, if you will. That and more on today's program. But first, we must take a break. For reasons you will understand in just a second. This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Go check it out. And while you're there, why not get a free audiobook download? Audiblepodcast.com/majority report. Audiblepodcast.com/majority report. Get a free audiobook download. Why not pick up Winner Take All Politics, How Washington Made the Rich Richer and Turned Its Back on the Middle Class by Jacob Hacker and Paul Pearson, and get it for free. Audiblepodcast.com/majority report. You win, we win, they win. Finally, we win. That reason, of course, that we would take a momentary break is to introduce Cliff Schechter. But before we introduce Cliff Schechter, we need to have the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services? You know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Cliff, are you there?
Does it sound like I'm coming from a war zone, Sam?
Cliff, are you driving a truck? Are you? I should be more specific. Are you backing up a truck?
I was thinking about it. It said it was the guy driving the golf cart past me in the airport here.
You know, it's amazing because that it actually sort of blended in nicely with your theme song. And I thought that was sort of like a some type of almost sort of like a bass line or some type of percussion.
It was kind of like the longer dance version.
Are you? Yeah, that was the house mix. Are you in? Are you leaving Charlotte? Is that what's going on?
Am I what?
Where are you now? Why are you in an airport?
I'm in the Charlotte airport, man. I've spent five fun-filled and obviously exciting days here in Charlotte for the Democratic confab. I think you spent one day talking to me. I was conducting all those interviews for Democracy for America. I learned that your job is one that is much harder than mine. It's really cool being a guest. You don't have to plan anything. You just like react to shit.
Right, stuff. I understand. Sorry. Stuff, right.
But having
you just got yourself
things.
A fine on your own station.
That's right. Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, that's good.
But then you like have to plan interviews with people. I was interviewing so many people. I was sitting down with some of your best friends, Chuck Schumer and
great
Barbara Boxer, and it was that was a different experience for me. I'm not used to being the question asker, so. That wore me out, and thankfully I'm at the airport on the way home.
Great. Well, now, did you get to see any of the convention, or were you just stuck in that basement boiler room that I spoke to you in?
That's right. I was stuck in the, it rubs the lotion on its face. I wasn't just in the boiler room. I got to go to the convention last night by using the best skills I can describe as Paul Ryan-like ass-kissing.
Uh-huh.
And I got myself a pass and sat up near where the press was. There's some pretty funny folks. I think I stepped on Margaret Carlson's toe getting into my seat and broke it.
Well, we all do in some fashion or another.
But, she's probably got good health care, so it's okay. I saw that. So last night actually was the one that I saw the speeches live.
All right, so, let's hear it. I mean, what did you think of the convention as a whole? What did you think of last night? Go.
Overall, I thought it was, the overall convention was, I think, from a political perspective, hugely successful. Obviously, there was a theme. They were sort of building towards something. There was a theme of talking a lot about veterans and service, which may have been somewhat added at the end as a reaction to Mitt Romney's forgetting that we have an army. I don't know. But that certainly was a large part of it, emphasizing women and not just sort of in the Mitt Romney, some of my best friends are women kind of thing. But actually having women up who support women's rights, not like your Mary Phelan's and Kathy McMorris Rogers type Republican women who think that if you're raped, you shouldn't have the right to choose. And so in those ways, I think it was very successful. Obviously, the Obama-Biden portion of last night's program was all about that bumper sticker, line that Biden came up with, GM's still alive and Bin Laden's dead.
Right.
They couldn't have emphasized that more had they tried, which they did. I would say to me the two big surprises of last night, I thought Biden's speech had some great moments. It went on too long. I think there are some great moments in there. You can guess how I feel about Obama's speech. I think they purposely toned down some of the lofty rhetoric because they're dealing with different circumstances. I thought he always is a good speaker, but of course, when he started talking about his wanting to bargain with Republicans, immediately that sends my antenna up and concerns me. Particularly, and talks about fair trade. He's talking about free trade the minute after he's talking about bringing jobs back to the U.S., so that doesn't really make sense to me. I'd say overall good speech, not his best, but very good compared to Romney. Good. And the final thing I'd say, the two surprising speeches were, my gosh, somebody unleashed the inner Jennifer Granholm.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened there. I don't know if she was sniffing goofballs before she got out on the stage there. Whatever happened, she was something else. And John Kerry, who if he had showed that side of him maybe in 2004, he had some of the best lines of the night. Is Osama bin Laden better off than he was 4 years ago kind of thing. And the Sarah Palin being able to see Russia from her house, it seems like Mitt Romney's only seen it in Rocky IV. You know, there's some good things like that. So I thought Kerry and Granholm were the two most interesting speeches. But I mean, again, you have to compare it to the Republican thing. The Republican thing was a big mess of Chris Christie, you know, talking all about himself and ruining any momentum they'd built out of Ann Romney's speech earlier. The Democrats finished with Michelle Obama. They had Bill Clinton the second night. There's nobody alive right now, I think, in either party that can come close to capturing what Bill Clinton can on stage. And then on top of all that, you know, and they, people actually weren't scared to, you know, mention the name Barack Obama. You know, they're talking, I mean, whether it's Clinton or Biden or whoever, they're talking about him throughout his entire speech, their entire speeches. So I can't help but look at that mess of a Republican convention. I mean, and I've not even spoken, obviously, about the guy yelling at the chair, because we've really talked a lot about that already. So.
Well, first off, let me work backward on my, we've been talking a lot about this in the office that, you know, the amazing thing, and there was that poll that showed that people thought that the Clint Eastwood thing was the highlight of the Republican convention, and we've also been talking about how much social media has sort of like extended the sort of the reach of just that moment of the Republican convention. And the UPS guy dropped off a package this morning, and I said, "Did you see any of the did you see the speech last night?" "Nah, I was too tired." "Did you see any of the conventions?" And he said, I saw the Eastwood." Out of all the conventions,
that
was the only thing. He's like, "I never. I thought the guy after the Super Bowl, I thought he was sort of a, you know, not so crazy, but he's, what happened? He's crazy."
That's all
that people know about from Republican convention. And I was, but getting back to one other point, and we had talked about this, I think, on when you had interviewed me, and it bears repeating, I was just struck about the entire convention that the Republican convention, just from a production standpoint, okay, because, again, this is just like, in many respects, this is just a huge ad. I'm convinced that it really has, you know, primarily two audiences that have any implications. One of the audience that's in the room, and whether they get sent out sort of jazzed up to do some groundwork. And the other is just the media. The production value of this convention, so much better than the Republican convention. Talking like the backdrop. And if I'm not mistaken, I don't know if you were at the Republican convention. I guess I could ask somebody about this, but the Democratic convention had the stage at one end of the stadium, width-wise or lengthwise, the long way. And I think the Republican convention had it in the middle, and it changed the camera angles in such a way that it just made the Democratic convention look more expansive and look more impressive in many respects. But so,
well, I think it was kind of, it seems to me almost like a metaphor for this campaign. It's sort of like they seem like they've been doing all the little things the Romney people wrong.
Yeah,
you know. The little mistakes, the dumb things, the unforced errors, and, you know, Clint Eastwood was that, and putting Christie after, you know, Ann Romney was that, and not making sure these people were actually talking about him. I mean, when you think about, you know, Joe Biden was talking about Obama, President Obama, really his entire speech. Bill Clinton was doing it, most of his, too. I mean, most of the speakers that got up there were doing it. And when you think about how little there was any mention of the existence of Mitt Romney,
right,
and his thing, so it just, they didn't vet them. I don't understand how they don't have professional people sitting there vetting these speeches. I mean, like, yeah, you're not going to give a speech about yourself in prime time for 45 minutes and then mention Mitt Romney twice, you know? And I just, so you're right. It's sort of like the camera angles, the production. The only thing that happened at the Democratic convention of note at all that they hadn't planned is a little, you know, fight over God in Jerusalem, which to me seems so silly anyhow, but I guess there are other people who take that stuff more seriously than I do. Yeah, I mean, look, you step outside of it politically for a second, who you and I or anybody else prefer. I mean, I don't think you can compare the two. I think one was a huge success. See, I'm backing up my truck again, by the way.
Yeah.
I like to back up Mack trucks while I talk to you. It adds a sort of another dimension of challenge.
Maybe in some respects it's the subtext of what you're saying.
It just may be. Actually, there was Chris Christie backing up.
So go ahead.
I'll never stop with those. I can't help it. I'm too much of a jerk. It seemed like a high school production versus like a professional production is the comparison.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, now that we've talked about the glossy of it, and I would also add like even. The only problem I had is some of those like short films, like the documentary on Biden. They used too many different I didn't like the VO guys. Like I liked it when Biden did the VO. The first 20 seconds of that was like a Malick movie. You know, just sort of like these beautifully sort of like shots of like, you know, sun-kissed children running in a yard and him just going. What is the meaning of, you know, just sort of like this wistful, and then it just turned into like, literally, it sounded like a BP commercial, the voiceover guy, they had the same there, but, you know, so, I mean, we've talked about the gloss, and this is really sort of partly for the media again, and partly, I guess, for, I don't know whom, but I wonder, you know, I was talking to Jack Hitt and Kevin Baker yesterday, and I wonder if you had a sense of, any of the people in there sort of really understanding, and this came out in President Obama's speech last night, big time, I thought, the whole notion of cooperation, the grand bargain, the refusal to say we're not going to cut Social Security and Medicare. In fact, you know, talking about we're not going to voucherize Medicare. We're not going to privatize Right. Social Security. Yeah, we know.
A straw man is what it is.
Yes. And the question is a mention of Simpson Bowles explicitly by Bill Clinton the other night and Simpson Bowles, I don't know if it was by Biden. I think it was.
One of them, either Biden or Obama, said that, you know, this is the sort of the roadmap that we would take or, you know, something of that sort.
Well, yes, Obama said that he called it the Deficit Reduction Committee. And I think Biden said Simpson Bowles report. And you know, so. This is bad news. I mean, you know, like, I wonder if there was anybody in that room just sort of going like, hey, wait a second. Romney and Ryan would march us into the opening of an active volcano. And Obama and Biden will sort of like let us skip through maybe just a wall of open flame. You know, I'm just trying, you know, sort of like, you know, like, and there doesn't, there is, you know, there is no third option. I just wonder if anybody's sort of conscious of that, or if there's any entities there that are saying, we know we have to elect Obama, but we also need to gear up for this fight.
Well, let me say two things. I want to get to that point in a second. First is I'll say that I saw there sort of two overall themes. There are probably others, but two that I kind of noticed closely. One was the one you're talking about. We compromise. We get along. We're going to be reasonable. We're going to do the Simpson Bowles thing. And, of course, that one very much disturbed me. We'll get more into that one in a second. The second one, the one that I really liked, was the one where finally, at some point, he actually defended government and talked about how we are all, you know, that we're not just all in it alone and sort of framed it as the Republicans say we're in this alone and we believe we're in this together. And sort of made the argument again for government and the civic commons and something where we do things together. That was the part of the Obama speech I actually liked the best.
Right.
You know, because I think that's a hugely important message to have out there right now, because people need to understand that there is a philosophy behind, you know, this Randian philosophy, which we all know, but I don't know if everybody knows, behind what Romney and Ryan are espousing, and that there's a different way, a way that it used to be done during what these guys called the good old days, like the 50s and 60s and whatever, that worked for America, that sent people like Neil Armstrong to the moon, you know, and stuff like that. So that's important. In terms of Simpson Bowles, you know, that is worrisome. And, you know, I know there's some people in the room who are willing to talk openly, but is the question against it? But the question always is it always, you know, we always run into is, would they be powerful enough to stop it? I mean, you know, I interviewed people for the DFA live studio, And Jan Schakowsky, for example, spoke up very much. You know, she was on the Simpson-Bowles committee, and she voted against the final plan because she came out and said that Social Security and Medicare should not be touched. I interviewed Russ Feingold, whose organization, Progressive United, went after, in fact, challenged Nancy Pelosi from the left and Democrats and really rankled some people on the, some of the progressive members of Congress by saying, this is ridiculous and we shouldn't do it. And Russ, you know, Senator Feingold said very openly to me that we're not here to make friends there, that we're going to keep doing. So those are two examples of progressives that are in semi-powerful to powerful positions. But the question is, are they enough when you've got the whole kind of, center right all the way over to even some of the people on the left supporting this thing? I mean, if Nancy Pelosi comes out and supports it, the question becomes, as I disclose in this show often, I work with Social Security Works, and I can tell you, without going to specifics, we're not going to go gently into that good night. I mean, if he gets elected, there's going to, we're going to make a lot of noise about this and have lots of plans to try to stop it.
Are there any other organizations? Are there any other organizations that we're talking about this? I mean, I guess Progressives United is one of them, and you're right. I mean, I know that there was a lot of members of Congress who were very unhappy about being attacked over that, and which is just another reason why Progressives United is actually sort of such an impressive organization, because it really speaks to the value of having a very high profile, popular former senator head one of these organizations, because as much as they're pissed about it, they're not going to deny the guy access.
He's still a member of the club, and that's important.
Yep. And I wonder, was there any others? I mean, did you get a chance to talk to any delegates who were just sort of like, I mean, I was just struck, like, this whole convention, it seems to me, the pundits are saying that Obama's speech wasn't good or whatever it is. I don't know. I thought the speech was okay. Got stronger towards the end, but I just don't think it matters. I mean, because look at the cutaways, just from knowing what I know from creating television, you look at the cutaways and every time they cut away, you have someone just sitting there like they are literally watching. They're watching their child graduate from college, or whatever moving moment, it's like they're watching birth for the first time, or, just everybody's like half in tears. When President Obama was talking about, quoting Lincoln and saying, I've gotten on my knees. And, I just thought, I even found it somewhat seductive, as cynical as I am about this. These people were incredibly moved, and that's the way that people take their cues.
You can't sit there and no matter how cynical you are and listen to, a mother talking about her daughter being able to get the drugs she needs.
I'm talking about Obama, even his speech, even.
I guess they showed his kids a lot. He has the two cute little kids and the rest. You're right. To me, the whole thing was that. I mean, right. Let's face it, they did a masterful job. Gabby Giffords getting up and pledging allegiance to the flag. And, they pulled every heartstring they could. There's no doubt about it. And to make you, sort of say, we're the party that cares about people.
Right. The delegates there, these people should be theoretically the most sophisticated about what's coming down the pike. And it just seems to me there's an obliviousness there of what is being teed up. And
here's what I would say, Sam, because I did talk to some of them, and some people, weren't as concerned, and others were much more concerned. The sad thing, I don't think it's an obliviousness. I think that they're resigned to that this is it.
Right.
It's sort of a matter of there is no other game in town. It's either you're going to support Romney and Biden, and that means you're going to deal with things that you don't agree with, which is you wish we'd gotten out of Afghanistan, tomorrow, and you're very much against a grand bargain, and you think they should be even much more fighting on much more economically populous grounds, particularly when it comes to housing and other things, and free trade is crazy, so-called free trade, and some of the other things, but we stayed in the same hotel as the Oklahoma delegation. So I got to talk to a whole bunch of them. And I think that would be the way I would describe it overall, which is, there are a few people who expressed concerns to me, and, you know, just an open conversation, you know, but I think that this is what they think they're getting. It's not like they're saying, well, we could vote for Bernie Sanders, you know,
right,
what they're going to get, and that's that.
I guess as Bill Maher says, this is a choice between a center-right party and the Bellevue Party.
Yes. Actually, I think that would be the almost exactly the right way to put it. And so I wish I had something more uplifting for people. I mean, again, I think that hopefully they will be good on, you know, and expand on some of the issues that they have been good on. And I guess we're just going to have to play the same, we're going to be in the same, playing the same roles the next, you know, assuming he gets reelected, which is we're going to have to go all out. And again, as I told you, I'm working with people. There are plans. We're going to do what we can when it comes to the grand bargain to get the best possible deal and better yet, no deal at all when it comes to Social Security and Medicare. I'm not a spokesman for the group. I'll be clear about that. I'm just saying I'm going to be involved in whatever effort strategically that we do. But, you know, it's tough because he openly keeps talking about this. And I don't think,
all right. Well, I will, for the next couple of months, I think just bore my audience to tears in talking about this or terrify my audience to tears about
the
grand bargain.
That's the way to do it, is if we get everybody in the media who cares about this to stay on it, you know?
The key is to definitely depress everybody to the point of where it's beyond capacity to sustain it. But, you know, occasionally...
Maybe you could sort of give out a prescription to Valium with a membership that the majority would want.
And I do vow to at the very least, mix up the interstitial music. So that is something that I can make a vow to do, and that's a long time coming. Did you hear any conversations regarding people's sense of prospects to pick up any new House members or to retain the Senate? What are people saying there?
I think people are thinking that there's a very good chance when it comes to the Senate that we're going to hold on. I think people are feeling pretty good about it. I mean, you know, Todd Akin's changed that entire dynamic. We may not all be overjoyed with Claire McCaskill. I know I'm not. But it's a Democratic seat. It's the one that looked like to be, I mean, seriously, it looked like outside of Nebraska, maybe the Democratic seat that was most surely ready to go Republican, you know, and now it looks like it won't unless Akin still, you know, jumps out, which could happen, although he's been pretty defiant so far. And there are some other things going people's way. I mean, you know, it's going to be a tough race in Massachusetts.
That seems to me to be one of the biggest ones. I mean, that seems to me to be the one that could really make the difference.
Yeah. And in, not just in, like, who controls, but in such a huge way.
Right.
To have sort of this slinky, slippery, you know, faux centrist as opposed to somebody who would be a leader, you know, in the Senate. And I think that... So that's obviously a hugely important race. You know, I've seen numbers that right now, and, you know, you show Heidi Heitkamp leading in North Dakota, who's a former attorney general who's very popular. I mean, will it last? And how much will Obama lose North Dakota by? How much will she have to overcome? You know, I don't know. But I think there are a lot of people there who think that it's going to be a margin of error somewhere between 49 and 51 Democrats. So that's the thought on that. In the House, I think most people think that House seats will be gained, but not enough. Not enough to take it back this time.
What have you heard in terms of Nebraska? How's one of my least favorite people in politics doing there? Bob Kerry.
Would that be Bob Kerry?
Because I'm anticipating Joe Lieberman leaving. Retiring, so.
Well, we could always elect Charlie Crist soon and then have him do that to us all the time.
Right, that's true.
So that's good. That race, Nebraska obviously has changed in its partisan makeup, and Bob Kerry spent a lot of time away from the state living in New York, and it looks like that's not even going to be close, which is surprising. I still don't, unless they promise him a position in the administration or something to drag money out there, I still don't really even understand why he decided to run. And here's a guy that was a presidential candidate. He has all the money he needs and was two or three-term senator, I don't remember, and left for a while, and now he's coming back, and he's a massive underdog. Mm. I mean, just because any Democrat would be, you know, and he's, you know, but, you know, I mean, Ben Nelson was going to have a really tough race, and he was the incumbent.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think Ben Nelson actually would have lost, which is why he signed up to run. So I don't see that being good. No, we probably lose that one, and my guess is we gain Maine. You know, because Angus King, I think will end up caucusing with the Democrats.
Right.
I don't think he will quite be like a Lieberman or whatever. He's good on most issues, but on grand bargain and stuff, some of the stuff we care about, look out.
Right.
And so you sort of start off almost at parity, because I really think that's the only Democratic seat that we're definitely going to lose, and they're going to definitely lose in Maine. But there's a whole lot of stuff that can happen in the middle, and it looks like they're not gaining the ground they'd like to in some other states. Even in Montana, apparently, what I've heard, Tester is looking like he's in decent shape to hold on. Not definitely, far from it, but 50-50 bet. So you know, who knows? And who knows when the next Republican Senate candidate will start espousing their personal scientific theory on something.
Right, exactly. You know? Well, I mean, you know, the real issue is going to be in the House. I mean, it's, at this point, it's almost like we either need the Democrats to take over the House, which is a hard road to hoe. And if they do, they will probably do it with a more progressive makeup than they had 2 years ago. If they don't, yep, we've just got to hope for the most rabid Tea Partiers possible, who will refuse to allow any tax increases or reversion of the Bush tax cuts, which I think is becoming less likely because their daddy, David Koch, has said, it's okay, kids, we're going to allow for some tax cuts because we have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to, or a generation, yep, I should say, to cut
Destroy
Social Security
Medicare
and Medicare.
Security.
And so we should take that because it'll take us about 15 months to rescind those tax increases.
To get those tax cuts back in.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, no, I think that's probably not far from the truth.
And so, he's go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, please.
I was going to say, you know, he's given his $400 million marching orders. Those are pretty important marching orders to people. I think that sadly is the way it plays out. It's kind of ironic if you think about it that you have to root for as many progressives to win, but then in seats with only slight, somewhat crazy Republicans versus really crazy, you have to root for the really crazy.
Right.
Because then they won't agree to the tax increase.
Right. Give me also one more question I had about just sort of like the sense you got from delegates. Is there a big contingency of people there? I know this was the case maybe a year or two ago, but I feel that it's less so now, but maybe it's just because of the bubble I'm in. Is there still a contingency of people there who are like, wait till Obama's second term, he's really going to be the guy that we thought he was, that type of stuff?
Oh my God, are there a lot of people like that? You know, it's a little distressing how human beings, how we are sheep, and can be convinced of almost anything. You know, I mean, he's saying a lot of that stuff now, and so he's giving those cues that it'll be different now.
But he's
not
really saying those things. I think turns on whether or not like you allow certain things to pass and justify them in your mind. But it's quite clear to me now what he is and is not saying. And he is being very explicit in my mind, or as explicit as one's going to be, that he is leaving himself room to cut these things, that it's still about cooperation, and it's still, that's very clear. And just the not mentioning anything about global warming other than it's wrong to mock it.
Right, but don't you make fun of that river.
Well, don't you make fun of the fact that global warming is happening. And moving on.
No, but I think he has released stuff, Sam. Like, they've been leaking things, obviously on purpose. I saw it in Politico, obviously, you know, Politico, but I've seen it in a few other places, too, that this is the second term will be when they will really tackle global warming and immigration reform. I've seen a few articles like that, and obviously I think that's what they're leaking so that they get the base psyched up.
Yeah, now, and that's not inconceivable they're going to attack it, but they're certainly not leaking we're going to protect Social Security and Medicare. They're certainly not
leaking that we
are going to pursue some mechanism in which to provide stimulus for the economy. I mean, the jobs numbers came out today. They were crappy. But, you know, I don't know why there is ever any anticipation of the jobs numbers coming in and being, like, good. You know, like, I can see, like, there's some variance between crappy and, you know, a little bit slightly less crappy. But why does anybody expect that anything's going to change? It's, you know, this is not going to magically rebound. The government has to do something. The government has to spend money. Otherwise, nothing's going to change.
But can't you lower interest rates so they're inverted?
Well, I mean, you could theoretically.
The government can pay you to borrow.
Well, the government's already doing that. I mean, the Fed's already doing that. The Fed is where people are paying the Fed to borrow money from us. But there needs to be some type of stimulus.
I'm not being serious. Obviously, what you said is 100% right. You know, I mean, it can't get that much better. The 96,000 jobs, obviously, they're going to point to the headline of it falling from 8.3 to 8.1. You know, if it gets under 8%, you know, they'll be jumping for joy. But
even that is all. Look, even all that stuff. I mean, if it falls under 8%, maybe that affects the sort of the huge meta narrative enough that it makes a difference. But look, the bottom line, I've been saying that, I think we've both been saying this for months. The economy sucks. There's just too many people who are unemployed. That's not going to change whether or not the jobs numbers is 96,000 or 150,000 or even 175,000. The bottom line is people feel the pain or they don't at this point. The narrative that exists on cable television for a week isn't going to make a damn difference. People aren't paying attention to that. You know, I saw Josh Barrow on Twitter saying, like, how could President Obama give that speech knowing what the jobs numbers are? Well, I don't know. Maybe the 40 million some odd people who watch that speech, out of them, 400,000 are checking what the jobs numbers are. I mean, give me a break. Give me a break. Honestly, maybe it's million who, you know, maybe it's 2 million.
Right,
it's just,
right,
you know,
right.
There's nobody out there who are sort of deciding whether or not they're going to vote who check the jobs numbers. You know, and that's going to in any way indicate to them what the supposed jobs numbers are. It's going to be a bellwether for them. It's just absurd. It's just, you know, the bubble right there.
Right. Well, yeah. The only people, if you're one of these still undecided voters who, you quoted Bill Maher already once, this conversation, I'll quote him again, who he referred to as idiots. Because they're so fetishized, you know. I mean, if you're sitting there right now like, well, if it hits 7.9, you know, I may lean towards Obama. Those are people that are so dumb that they're embarrassing anyhow. You know, at this point, you've heard what everybody has to say. You've taken a look at stuff. You've taken stock of your personal situation and what you believe. And you, how anyone has not come to a decision which of these two people they're going to vote for is astounding to me.
Right. And to the extent that those people haven't come to a decision, those people are probably at the complete bottom of the list of people who would ever check what the change in the monthly jobs report is.
Right. They may randomly hear it, like, riding in a cab or see it somewhere, and maybe that would do it. But you're right. They're not out there looking for it.
No.
So
yeah.
It's not going to affect much. What issues are important to you and how you perceive your personal situation. And you're right. I mean, there are going to be a lot of people that don't, you know, they're going to have to decide. I mean, now the Obama people have given them a choice by pointing out, you know, Romney's way of doing business and what he's done. Romney just, you know, has added to that by saying an unbelievable number of stupid things and by adding Paul Ryan to the ticket. And so people, I think the vast majority of people who are going to be going to vote are going to be people going to vote and saying, well, things kind of suck right now, but I need to decide, are they going to suck less if I elect Obama or Romney? And Obama's trying to make the case that they're going to suck a lot more than if you vote for Romney. That's my, and frankly, that's kind of my belief. That's what it comes down to, I would think, anyhow.
Well, Cliff, I know that you've got to catch an airplane, and so I will let you go.
Well, there's a truck I have to go back up first.
Yes, but go bring the what do you call it to bring the luggage to that flight that's headed to Arizona, and we will let you go. But thanks for joining us. I may not talk to you next week. We may not. You and I may have to pre-record. I am going to be filling in for Chris Hayes next Saturday, the 15th. Chris Hayes is taking the day off, or I think he's going out to the West Coast. And so I'm going to be filling in for him, and I may be having to, prep for that show on Friday.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. It's my favorite show on television. This is like the functional equivalent of me filling in for Jeff Probst.
Very cool. Well, now I know. I'll be waiting to get my guest invite.
Yes. Well, I will. We'll talk about that. Technical difficulties.
I just wanted to make sure to get that out there on the air, so that next week, everyone can ask you.
Well, let me know if you're in New York City.
All right, I will do so.
Okay.
Cliff Schachter. Well, we can pre-record whatever. You just let me know, buddy. I'll be happy to talk to you yet again.
All right, I appreciate it. Cliff Schachter, everybody. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to we're going to get Andy Kindler on the phone, see if he can give us his breakdown of the speech last night by President Obama. We'll be right back after this. All right, folks, we're going to give Andy Kindler a call. Get a I hope he's available. I probably should have given him a heads up.
Hello?
Andy?
Yeah.
Hey, it's Sam Cedar calling.
Hey, Sam.
How's it going?
How you doing, man? I got a little bit of a cold, but I'm okay a little bit.
Sorry to hear that.
I was up early checking on my clout number, though. It's looking good.
Oh, your clout number went up. That's the Twitter measure. Oh, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. I wasn't waking you in anything, right? I mean, I know it's early on the West Coast. I know you like to sleep in.
I sleep in, but I am meeting with my Twitter team in about an hour to go over what we're going to go over today's tweets.
I don't want to interrupt you. It occurred to me that today was Friday, and of course this whole last week I don't know if you watched any television last night. Did you watch any TV?
Yeah, I watched some good stuff last night, man.
Well, that's what I wanted to know. I wanted to get your take if you saw the Obama speech and what you thought about it.
He knocked it out of the park, Sam. Home run. It's over, Sam. The eggs are in the refrigerator. The chicken is jiggling.
Wait a
second.
It's
over. It's over.
Andy, I'm sorry. What?
We are the hope that we can believe in. We are the change that we came to believe in, Sam. That was the greatest speech I've ever heard in my life. I thought Biden was good, and then Obama came on stage.
I gotta say,
and you thought Jennifer Granholm was fantastic, and then Obama brought it home.
Okay, so
I still believe in a place called hope. I still believe in a place called hope.
Well, a place called hope was that's where Bill Clinton was from.
Does not matter. Obama 4 more years. Maybe they will pass. Maybe he'll get a third term if things go the way I plan.
But and Andy, aren't you concerned at all with what President Obama had to say about deficit reduction and austerity at a time where we really need the government to spend more money?
Even if he doesn't say everything he's going to do, I have faith that he has plans that I don't necessarily have to hear all of the plans to know that my my hopes and dreams are safe with Obama. He will know what to do. He's good on his feet. He's quick on his Did I mention he's quick on his feet? He is going to go forward, Sam. He is going to go forward. He's going towards the future we need, not back towards the failed problems of the past.
But Andy, I mean, he didn't explicitly say he would protect Social Security and Medicare, and that is a little bit disturbing, no?
He will protect Social Security and Medicare. I have complete faith in his ability to make those decisions. Why are you a naysayer, Sam? Why are you a naysayer?
Well, I'm a naysayer because he didn't say that he would protect that. I mean, and all the reports are that he wants to sort of negotiate it away as part of a grand bargain.
He looked good, Sam. Oh, did he look good? He looked us right in the face. He looked America in this right down the barrel, Sam. Right down the barrel, I always tell you.
Down the barrel.
And he said, that's right into the faces and eyes of Americans.
Well, I mean, but... why wouldn't he look into the face? I mean, everybody looks into the face when they're giving a speech.
He makes a connection like no other human being has ever made a connection before.
Wow.
You cannot come up... We need more adjectives, Sam. More adjectives.
You need more adjectives.
To describe what a wonderful job he did.
Wow, I got to say, you seem to really, really like it.
Drones are effective in most cases. We must use drones.
Drones are effective in most cases.
We all want to close Guantanamo. I want to close Guantanamo. Even the people on Guantanamo want to close it. You can't, but he had to do what he could do. His beliefs in gay marriage evolved over time.
I know that. You just seem to be sort of spouting things. Like, what are you saying? The drones are effective. I mean, I don't understand
if you were in the position that he was in the position, you could make decisions the way he made decisions. We are not in that position. We can only hope and trust and place our belief in what we believe in.
Well,
even that last sentence did not come out as Obama meant it to come out.
Okay. Well, then, you know what? You just revealed something, Andy, you just referred to yourself as an Obama bot. That's what I'm finding a little difficult to accept here.
I am a proud Obama bot. I just ordered my campaign control panel.
They're sending out campaign control panels?
That is right. It says forward, but it says also look. It says do not look inside. Do not operate machinery. Okay,
it's a control panel that only has the button forward. Is that what you're saying?
It says, but well, there is also a off-on switch, but it's in smaller type. We are always on. He says we are always on. Obama says there is no off switch on the on switch.
Well, okay, so...
Even when he's sleeping, he's not sleeping.
I understand. Well, Andy, I just...
Did you ever see those photos from the Situation Room on the night that we killed Osama bin Laden? Unbelievable.
I saw those. Yeah, I saw those.
Look at Hillary Clinton. She looked like she was going to cry. But Obama, he knew what was going to happen.
Right. No, of course he knew it. That's why they all gathered in the Situation Room. I think you might have to have, like, yourself, get, like, the latest firmware, I think, because there's a little bit of... There's a little bit of, I don't know, I'm picking up just a little bit of stutter in your cape.
Obama, Obama, Obama.
Okay, all right.
Obama.
Well, Andy,
Obama.
I've got to go, but I appreciate your
insight. I have to go, too. I have to make phone calls on behalf of Barack Obama. I cannot stay on this line, either. I must work every day until the election.
All right, well, good. Thanks for giving us your insight into the speech.
Thank you for your support, Sam. Can we count on your support on November 4th or 5th or whatever it is?
I got a really good jump, Andy. Thank you for calling.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Wow. Andy, I don't know. Was it me or did you notice like there was a specific change in tone as soon as I asked him about President Obama. I don't know. It was... Whoa. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to Abi Hassan. He is the Mass Defense Coordinator for National Lawyers Guild. We'll be right back after this. Folks, we are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Abi Hassan, he is the Mass Defense Coordinator for the National Lawyers Guild. Welcome back to the program, Abi.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Now, are you still in Charlotte at the moment, or whereabouts are you?
I am in Charlotte trying to get out.
I understand. I know that's tricky. So give us a sense of what took place outside of the convention this week in terms of protests. Were there – how big were the protests? How militarized were things there? I've read you know, a couple of stories, but the coverage of the protests was, frankly, virtually non-existent, at least on the corporate media.
Huh. Okay. So, I haven't had much time to keep up with the media, but I think there, it was markedly different than Tampa in that Tampa was a city on lockdown, as I probably said last week.
Yep.
But Charlotte, there was a huge police presence, but there was also a lot more kind of commingling. The protesters kind of had much more access to real people. There were still people downtown. Downtown was not deserted at all, actually. It was much more of like a kind of street fair vibe out there. There was a lot of right-wing protesters on the street corners, a lot of anti-abortion people with the big gross signs, stuff like that, and left-wing people yelling at them, and there was like some actual free speech going on, which was interesting, which wasn't really the case in Tampa.
Oh, interesting.
There was a good crowd. It wasn't huge. It wasn't probably the levels of previous, the RNCs have been the big ones under the Bush years. It wasn't huge crowds, but there was significant protest activity. Nonetheless, there was a real coalition, a really strong coalition locally of kind of different activist groups that had a convergence space. They were doing all kinds of activities, and they had a big march on Sunday last week. And then there was an Occupy camp where that had set up in one of the parks, Marshall Park down here. And so that was also a hub for a lot of the protest activity.
In terms of those protests, I mean, what kind of numbers were we looking at? I mean,
I'm probably not the best source to give numbers on
right.
the protests. I think there was hundreds, but I don't have a good estimate on the numbers because there's a lot of different marches, right? There's the big march on Saturday. I mean, on Sunday, the numbers I heard were like around 500, maybe more. But then there was a lot of just dispersed actions and different marches. So it was harder. It was a lot more after the big kind of the big march and then the Labor Day stuff. It was a lot more just actions happening. There was some direct actions. There was some arrests. There was the undocumented bus civil disobedience. There was some environmental civil disobediences where people would block traffic or sit in the street and were purposely getting arrested, and crowds would gather for that. And then there were regular marches coming out of the Occupy camp.
Interesting. And my one thing that I had seen, at least I think on Twitter, was the notion that like the right wing protesters, the anti-choice protesters, were able actually to get much closer to the DNC than some of the Occupy and left wing protests. Do you know anything on that?
Well, you know, I think that's an interesting question, right? Because we saw a lot of. So what we saw a lot of was there was a lot of undercovers and a lot of plain clothes, a lot of police just, and we were getting a lot of reports of people being told to stop and being detained, but like by undercover or plain clothes who didn't even offer, I mean, according to the protesters, didn't identify themselves. So basically they're being told to stop by someone and they just don't stop because they're like, this person tells you to stop, they don't identify as police, and then they get detained or arrested. And there was some stuff that came out of confrontations with right wing protesters. You know, it's interesting. I wonder. I mean, outside of outside of Timothy McVeigh, has they ever arrested a right wing protester? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
So these guys are out there doing stuff. I don't know specifically. Like, I don't have reports of specifically where they were in terms of proximity to delegates or whatever. But people were, like I said, people were out on the streets. But definitely, I think in terms of who was getting arrested and who was getting harassed, it was, if you look like Occupy, if you look like a left winger, you're the one that's going to get police attention, right? So.
Yeah, I mean, I saw one story where Kevin Gostola of Fire Dog Lake and Steve Horn, contributes to Truth Out, got caught up with some undercovers who were basically pretending to be protesters at one point too.
Yeah, I mean, and we can't know how many there were, but you could. I mean, just you get like a cop vibe, and you can tell that there's a lot of them out there.
Right.
And that story, I read that story actually, and that is very similar to a lot of the stories we got from protesters that just. Dudes, like, you know, and then that same kind of dynamic where why should you have to listen to someone who's not clearly identified as a police officer, but then they get aggressive when they get outed or when you don't do what they say.
Right.
So that story, I think, I don't, you know, the fact that it happened to, like, you know, some people who are fairly prominent and it, like, have media access is, I think, indicative of the level of that kind of thing happening, right? That, like, if they even got to these guys, that's what they've been doing.
How many arrests did you guys deal with?
Not a lot. I think we're about a dozen. Okay. So, I mean, and that's not including, there were two civil disobedience. Like, there were the big, there was the undocumented bus people. That was about 10 people. And then there was another civil disobedience of about 6 people. But scattered around arrests were there weren't any mass arrests. There weren't any like we've seen in the past where hundreds of people are arrested while protesting. I think that partially that might be a function of their policing strategy, but also a function of the lower turnout.
I don't know how it works with the National Lawyers Guild in terms of the how much. You guys have a sense of what's happening with upcoming protests, but are you surprised at the level of activity? Did you anticipate there being more protests or less protests, or is that something that you don't necessarily key into?
So, I mean, I can tell you, like, what we do is we have chapters and we have members across the country, right? So people who are lawyers or law students and legal workers can join the National Lawyers Guild. And one of the things that we're kind of best known for is this kind of mass protest legal support. And so just just for information, what we do is we set up hotlines and we set up these support services. We try to make contact with the activists and we try to get a feel of the city, and hopefully we have like local people who are doing work, so who are doing work in the areas. And so, you know, we kind of prepare for the worst, and I think that's what we did here. We prepared for what we've seen at past major conventions, which is hundreds of arrests, you know, use of less lethal weapons, LRADs, pepper spray, all that stuff. You know, like in NATO, you know, we have that's what we were ready for. So I think that we were ready for that. But, you know, it's one of those things with these two conventions, they're in the South, right? So they're in places that don't have huge, like, established, like, left-wing activist communities. Mm-hmm. There are definitely, you know, there's definitely activism going on in Charlotte. There's definitely activism going on in Tampa. But it's not the same as if you're in, you know, the Northeast, major city, you know, Chicago. So that seems to be part of the strategy for a lot of these things, is to keep it out of there, right? Like, it looks like there's going to be a lot. We're thinking there's probably going to be a lot more of this kind of thing where they're going into smaller cities and
avoiding the centers where they know there's sort of shorter supply lines, I guess, for protest in some respects.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing, I mean, I think another thing with this was that, you know, the unions, there wasn't a heavy union turnout here. I mean, and the unions are often big bolsters of these things. I think the unions got turned away by the hurricane, maybe to a large extent in Tampa, but here they just weren't coming, a lot of them.
Interesting. And let me ask, I want to go back to, you mentioned that the UndocuBus protesters were in the, were a couple of those were arrested. Then I would imagine they're also risking deportation. What has happened with those people? Do you know?
They were all released.
Are they released and then sort of like, are they in some type of database now? I mean, it's one thing to be released in Charlotte, but at one point they're going to go somewhere, right? And presumably now they're in some type of database.
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, they have, you know, you should probably get one of their people on. They have a really good media team, but, you know, they have their, I mean, they have their stuff together, basically. Like, they have a really good legal team, and they were on top of everything as soon as it happened. So, I think that it seems like, you know, they're kind of testing the system, but from what I understand, they're not getting, you know, there hasn't been any deportation orders or anything like that.
Good. All right. Well, Abhi, thank you so much for joining us. I know you guys still doing a fundraiser over the National Lawyers Guild?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have 24 hours left, indiegogo.com/NLG. You know, we haven't gotten quite the kit to, because it hasn't been the big arrest, which, you know, at the end of the day is a good thing, but we need to pay some of these bills.
Right.
So, and people can, you know, if there's anybody in the audience who is like a lawyer, a progressive lawyer or a legal worker who's done this kind of stuff, they should, you know, consider joining. It's a cool organization. You can get out on the street and do legal observing and really get a really interesting perspective on protest and learn a lot.
It's my one lament when I see you guys out there. It's my one lament in terms of having left law school. So
you could do it. We could probably train you to be a legal observer. I bet that we could figure out something.
Oh, really? All right. Now we're talking. I would love, and then maybe you guys can also show. I would, because there's other stuff I'd like to practice too.
Yeah, well, I think it's a good way to get involved. You meet a lot of cool people.
The Bar Association radar. Do a little work.
Can I tell you one more story before you go?
Please.
So there was a report yesterday of some kind of like anarchist looking guys and girls walking down the street and got in a verbal altercation with one of these right wing guys who's yelling about Jesus, and the guy told me that the police pulled him over, took his bottle of Arizona sport drink and said, "We found the urine." and then made him drink it in front of him afterwards, and he gladly drank it. It was like Gatorade or something like that.
So the cops came in and were like, we found the huge stash of anarchist urine, and it turned out to be tea, and forced them to drink the tea.
Well, yeah, they just said, well, prove. He's like, no, they offered. They're like, what are you talking about? I'll drink it, you know. But it's just, you know, that story just won't die.
That's hilarious. Well, and of course, we all know that one of the things to be an anarchist, you need to practice drinking your own urine just in case you get into that type of situation.
Yeah. All
right.
Man.
Well, Avi, thank you so much. We'll put a link to your fundraiser. Appreciate you taking the time for us.
Thanks so much.
Okay. All right, folks. We're going to head into the better half of the program wherein, I mean, gosh, you've gotten such a bonus today. And I know you don't like the word freeloader. Oh. Well, I know that you guys who just like, I contribute to NPR and I don't appreciate being called a freeloader. Well, I know that you're not even listening anymore, because I know that you stopped listening 20 minutes ago when you got the normal size of the free show. So if you're listening for the extra 20 minutes of this free show on a Friday, you are a freeloader, mister. And you know who I'm talking to. I'm only talking to one of you. And it's you. So you know who I'm talking to, sir.
All you others just load freely.
That's right. You're just free potters. But this dude is a freeloader, and you know who I'm talking to, don't you, sir? You should. So be gone with you. For the rest of you, I appreciate you listening this far. And know that you have contemplated becoming a member of the Majority Report. Maybe if you have contemplated and you haven't done it, you're going to take Strange Angels up on their offer and do a free trial membership by emailing us at Majority Reporters and using the word Strange Angels in the subject line. I don't know. Maybe you're just like, you know what? I don't need a free trial. I already know I want to become a member. I've just been lazy. But fortunately, I've been reading this book about procrastination, and I'm no longer going to procrastinate. And this is how I'm going to start. I'm going to start. Today's the first day of my life. And I'm not going to wait until Monday. I'm going to do it now. I'm going to become a member. And then there's the rest of you who I know, you're still using the Amazon link to buy your Amazon crap, which you found at majority.fm/support-the-show. And there's some of you who are donating your account and giving us iTunes reviews and buying Just Coffee at justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, chocolate, 10% coupon code, majority. You can get the Majority Report blend. Some of you are even buying merch and enjoying that coffee in a Majority Report coffee cup. We'll see you on Monday. Tomorrow will be sort of, next week will be sort of a hinky wink. Because I will be filling in for Chris Hayes, which I couldn't be more excited about. And stick around. The better half of the program, 646-257-3920 is the phone number. 646-257-3920 is the number.
Will they call it Up with Chris with Sam that day?
No. Nope. Not at all. I will say this, though. I'll tell you who is really nervous right now. It's that pastry plate. Because this could be the first time that pastry plate is naked on TV. If you know what I mean. All right, folks. See you in the better half.